First of all, I want to thank y'all very much for being here. That meeting actually was a little longer than last year.
Yeah, but it wasn't as angry.
But I thought the tone of the questions were calmer and thoughtful. I was impressed with the questions, and I was impressed with some of the comments and suggestions that people made. Oh, thank you.
So, Julie, you want to start it off?
Yeah, sure. I'd like to actually talk just a little bit about your energy efficiency programs. You had some rulings that came down this week, and you portrayed it in there as wins, the rulings that have happened in the last couple of days. But you also have encountered some resistance about the compensation, the way you would recover your costs for Save a Watt, as well as for your solar program. So I just am wondering what you think that says about Duke's approach to energy efficiency at this point, and whether or not you may consider changing course.
I think the very important thing to appreciate about energy efficiency is that for so long in this country, we have not had the right regulatory model that incented the type of investments that would truly make a difference. Virtually every state in this country allows utilities to pass the cost through, but doesn't allow them to capitalize the cost and earn off of it in the same way we build a power plant. And so what we've proposed with Save a Watt is a compensation system that incents us to invest beyond the meter, invest in our customers, in the homes and businesses of our customers. And at the end of the day, that will help them reduce their bills. And that's what it's all about.
But that approach has not been embraced yet by regulators. So is it workable? Are you going to try something different?
No, because it actually has been embraced. It was embraced in Ohio, where they basically embraced Save a Watt, but they did it at a lower percentage of avoided costs. And that may be too technical. But my belief is both North Carolina and South Carolina have signaled that they like our programs that we want to implement. They need a little more time to think about how to compensate us for investing in them. And my judgment is if they will come up with an approach that is similar to our approach, but probably not with as much incentives as we ask for.
With the Utilities Commission ruling yesterday on your solar rooftop program, does that mean the program goes ahead?
It does mean to go ahead. And we are delighted to be able to implement this program. We think it's a first step in our ability to deploy capital and to build out solar. And I think it's solar and wind are both going to be key parts of our energy mix in the future. And this allows us to invest in them here in North Carolina, specifically in solar. And I think that's good news.
The stock obviously took a hit, as we all know. Can you tell us what you're looking forward to in the second quarter? What can we sort of expect?
First, I would say that last year we beat all the utility indexes. In a sense, we outperformed all the indexes. This year, we're outperforming all the indexes. That's the good news. The bad news is all the stocks have fallen. We just haven't fallen as far. So as I like to say, we're the fastest of the slow rabbits. But the good news is that we have a very solid value proposition. And the fact that in the last 15 months, people have loaned us $5.5 billion to invest in our business tells you they have confidence in our business plan, tells you they have confidence in management, and tells you that even in a period where people can't borrow money, that we are a safe bet. And primarily because we have a strong balance sheet and we have a good plan with respect to the investment of those dollars.
What were you thinking when you knew that you had to deliver that news to the investors?
The news of?
The stock price.
I've been a CEO for 20 years. And I've been through good periods and bad periods. I've been through periods where the stock price is up and the stock price is down. I've been in recessions and out of recessions. We're in a very tough time now. We're in a period where the stock market has fallen off dramatically. The good news is we've fallen off a lot less than the entire market. It's bad news. It's always bad news, but that's life. I'm an optimist, though. We will come out of this recession as a country. We'll come out stronger. It might take longer, and the recovery might be weaker than any in the past. And quite frankly, I think it's going to leave us in a place that we don't know we're recovering because the recovery will be so weak. So I have basically are managing the business, battening down the hatches, knowing that this period that we're in now could be 3 to 5 years. I hope it's shorter, but I'm being conservative by looking at it being longer.
Do you know, are you still planning to apply with South Carolina to start your certificate of necessity and all that? Thank you, sir.
CBCN.
Yeah. This year, I mean, it was going to be last year, and then it was going to be later. And then now it's late this year. Are you still planning that? Because there's a lot more up in the air now.
What we've learned is that there were two components of this. One was the need component, and the other really had to do the recovery of QIP. Mm-hmm. And so you had to have a contract signed with a engineering procurement construction group first. But what we have found is that we can file just for the CPCN without having to enter into the contract to build it. We think it's more prudent to go get approval of the CPCN, the need portion, and that's what we're going to do at the end of this year. I apologize for being so wonkish in the answer, but it's a technical point that's important because what we're going to go ask is for permission to build this because we believe that we need it.
But you're not likely to have a contractor by the end of the year, is what you're saying.
That's correct.
And so you won't know exact costs. You won't know.
We will have all of these when you file our estimates of what the cost
sure.
will be. And one of the reasons that we're delaying and negotiating the contract is that we think commodity prices are coming down. They haven't been reflected yet by contractors in the cost of steel and copper yet. And so we're taking a hardline position on that because we think the cost of building is going to come down, particularly in this recessionary period, and especially when you look at the world commodity market for steel and copper, et cetera. We think all those markets are down and will stay down, and we want to take advantage of that.
John is referring to
the lead nuclear. I was just going to ask. I wanted to make sure.
Yeah.
And Jim, you want to kind of explain what QIP is, construction work in progress, and what that means?
Sure. Construction work in progress, we have the ability to do that with a plant that we're building both in North and South Carolina. It allows us to adjust our rates periodically to recover the financing cost on the plant as we build it. Why is that important? It's important for two reasons. One is it translates into lower costs to consumers because before we had QIP, we would capitalize that cost and then put it in the rate base and earn off of it. It's important to investors because it gives us cash as we go and doesn't put us in a place that strains our balance sheet. You might have heard on the earnings call the other day that we're projecting that our cash is going to be $400 million more than what we expected for two reasons. Or for one reason, but for two sets of projects.
And that's in
2009,
right?
That's in 2009. It's primarily tied to the stimulus package that was passed by Congress. $200 million of it's tied primarily to our regulated business. And importantly, $200 million is tied to the wind investments that we're making in Texas, Oklahoma, and Colorado. We have a total of 14 states where we're proposing to build wind generation in the future.
You mentioned to the analysts as well the need for state legislation in regard to building a regional plant. Could you elaborate on what the legislation would be?
Our judgment is that it makes more sense to build a regional nuclear plant than for each company to build its own plant for two reasons. One is the risk is shared so no one company shoulders all the risk. And secondly, you're spreading the cost of this plant over a much larger group of customers, so the per customer cost is less. So it makes it more affordable to consumers, it reduces the risk to our investors, and makes sense. It also allows us to time the building of nuclear plants with our load, because generally if you're building a large nuclear plant, you bring it online, it's a very lumpy add to your generation fleet. So this allows you to kind of smooth it out over time and smooth the cost impact out to consumers. And I think that's a very important concept. The other part of regional that's important is I think it would allow us to finance it differently. You know, in Washington, they have loan guarantees. They authorized them, but they appropriated very little money. And quite frankly, they haven't executed on it. And Washington doesn't have a whole lot of money these days. And so my judgment is that if we can pass law in North and South Carolina, build regional plants, we can build these in a way that will allow us to raise money at a lower cost and to structure them in a way that will also reduce the cost to consumers. So we view this regional approach will drive the cost down to consumers, not only in the way we finance it, but also the way we share it over a greater customer group, and that that is really an important key to nuclear making economic sense in the future.
So what would the legislation do exactly?
I think it would provide a process and procedure that would allow a group of companies to come together and propose the building. And so if one company does it, they come and show their need. If five companies are doing it, they each show their need for the capacity. That gets a certificate that allows us to build it. Then we get a permit, environmental permits. We get NRC permits that are in the process of being approved. But it really allows us to think about this from a regional standpoint. And one of the things, and I know, John, you've written about this, and Bruce, I don't think you have, is that the Orangeburg decision, I think, was a very unfortunate decision because it's predicated on the same principle. The people of South and North Carolina are in this together. And to the extent we can sell to consumers in Orangeburg is the same principle of letting of munis and co-ops in this region be part of this, because then there's a sharing of cost, and then when we build new facilities, whether it's nuclear or gas or coal or solar, there's a sharing there over a bigger customer group. So it's a way to get economies of scale regionally and get the lowest cost power to consumers over time. And so I'm a great believer in that. I've spent in the Midwest, there were a lot of our power plants that we owned jointly with others. I'm comfortable in being in partnerships. Catawba is a partnership, for instance. So again, regional makes sense to customers, and that's a really important point.
Can I ask on your the Catawba River license that Duke Energy has is up for renewal right now, your hydropower license. Obviously, it's a critical license for all of your energy production in this area. Alcoa is in a similar situation with their license up for renewal on the Yadkin. Do you have any position on their issue and whether or not they should be granted this renewal?
I'm kind of looking at my team, and they're going.
You don't have a position.
I'm not smart enough to have a position.
We have enough to worry about with Catawba, much less
but
Alcoa.
Thank you for asking, but
it is a fair question.
Yeah, I mean, it's an identical type license. They go through the same process. Well, you guys are a little bit further behind in the process.
We're
way ahead.
We actually have a settlement that people have signed
on. They do too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I think we have more folks. We have 80%. folks who signed off, which is the highest ever FERC's had.
I think the reality is I'm an expert on what we do. Well, not on everything we do, but...
So let me then, if I can't get an answer to that question, let me just ask, in your negotiations with folks in Washington, Representative Waxman, about the Coal Clean Energy Act, it appears likely that coal, burning coal, is going to become more expensive just based on the likelihood of a cap and trade program. So how do you factor that into your concern about affordability? Because, I mean, you talk a lot to your shareholders about how coal is the cheapest way to go here, but it's going to get more expensive given the likelihood of regulation. So is that still a valid argument moving forward that this is the cheapest way to go?
First, I think the cost of electricity is going to go up over the next 15 years. The real price is going to go up, and it's going to go up for several reasons. It's going to go up for as a consequence of the investments that we're making to retrofit our plants for pollutants. It's going to go up as we invest in the smart grid. It's going to go up as we put more and more capital into our aging infrastructure. Our plants are, 40 years old on average, so our investment in them is going to be greater. It's going to go up primarily because of carbon regulation. To the extent you have a renewable portfolio standard where you have to buy renewables at 150% of traditional generation, that's going to drive your prices up. So I think one of the messages that I'd like to get out is that the price of electricity is going up. And we've come off a period for 15 to 20 years where the real price of electricity has actually gone down. So we're in a period of rising prices. And so what we try to do on every component is to make sure we're making smart choices. And it's really about the relative cost of the different choices, coal versus nuclear versus wind versus solar versus natural gas. And when we make a decision to build a plant, we factor in the cost of carbon. Because we it's in our models because we think it's inevitable that carbon will be regulated in this country, and we need to understand the economics of it so that we're making smart choices, because when we build a plant, we're building a plant that will be in service for 40 to 60 years.
So is the Cliffside plant as needed today and as viable, two different things, today as it was 2 years ago when you began construction or when you originally applied?
Yes, it is, and for several reasons. First, while our demand is flattened out, we see our demand continuing to grow as we look out to 2020, 2030, 2040. And that's really the growth in the Carolinas. I can't remember the statistic, but I think they're projecting going from 9 million people to 12 million people by 2025, I think, or 2030, sometime in that time zone. So we have to be prepared to serve all that comes with that. I think the other thing is, that's very important, we see Cliffside as a modernization of our fleet. It allows us to build only 800, but over time to shut down 1,000 megawatts of 60-year-old plants that haven't been retrofitted for pollutants. This really, and these are pollutants that really stay in the local area, sulfur dioxide, nitrogen oxide, mercury, fine particulate. So that environmental footprint shrinks with that. And so I think that is a positive with Cliffside, coupled with the fact that the carbon intensity, because it's so much more efficient than the plants we're shutting down, the actual carbon intensity of our fleet will go down.
One more. Anybody have a follow-up?
Just wondered if you could back up 5 years and have a new administration in Washington, the imminent prospect of carbon caps, would you go forward with Cliffside if you had to do it over again?
I think that you're rolling the clock back 5 years.
Yeah. With present conditions, I mean, if you had to make the decision over again, if you were in the planning stages for Cliffside, flip side, would you do it again?
Knowing what you know now.
With current conditions.
Right. That's a good question, actually. And it's a very tough question. The companies merged, and I became CEO in 2006. And I took a fresh look at Cliffside.
We announced it in May of 2005.
Right. Announced it in May 2005. The merger occurred in April, May 2006. I took a fresh look at this. And, Bruce, I struggled as to whether we should build this plant or not at that time. And I dug into the numbers. I looked at what the demand projections are going to be. I looked at the prospect of carbon legislation in the future. And the decision to go forward with Cliffside is probably the single toughest decision that I've made since I became CEO of the combined company. But I made the decision to go forward. And the only way that I could justify the decision in my mind at that time was to know that it would facilitate the shutting down of 1,000 megawatts. And as John may remember, because he was covering the case at the time, I basically, from the stand, under cross-examination, proposed the shutdown of these facilities as part of the approval of this, because I've always believed that building this plant is a bridge plant, because I know the geology isn't here to do sequestration, and that what makes it make sense is the fact that the carbon intensity will go down of our product, and we're number 9 in the country today. And quite frankly, I think Jim Warren had it wrong. We're looking at 10% reduction in our carbon intensity, I think, just in the Carolinas by 2012, by bringing this unit on and bringing the gas units on that we've got proposed in energy efficiency. And I think that it is reducing the carbon intensity. It's the option to shut down the 1,000 megawatts. It's the fact that we only built one unit.
You wanted two, though.
No, but I was comfortable with one. I'm talking about how I think about it. And at the end of the day, that all made sense to me.
Okay, guys. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.